Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 19th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host, Ron Meniza, went to the Know Your Farmer Fair earlier, and now he's out at the UConn game, so I'm here flying solo. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Well, first of all, first show that I have recorded since I went to the Know Your Farmer Fair, which I've been talking about the last little while. I saw Sarah today, so she thanked me profusely for promoting the Know Your Farmer's Fair. So if you went, because you heard it from me, thank you. If you went regardless, thank you also. I went, I had a very nice time. There were, as predicted, there were loads of vendors there, and I bought myself some, mushroom sea salt. Very nice. Some salt that had powdered mushrooms in it. That's going to be an easy way to get more mushrooms into my diet because I'll put it into mostly salads, but we can use it on fish and other savory things, on popcorn. It'll be a really nice thing to have. I love to go to that mushroom vendor. He makes delicious mushroom jerky, so I got some of that. There was local honey, but we have a surplus of local honey, so I didn't get any honey. And Elaine, the person who sews, she sews all kinds of cool stuff. She sews a lot of coasters, which is fantastic. So these coasters are just absolutely marvelous. They said things like resist, and there were special coasters for the Shabu, which were being used for donations. There were a couple of coasters that she had made. All the proceeds are going to beneficial organizations like the No Free Shelter, for example, in Willimantic, which is a place that keeps people who need housing out of the cold. Great place. Anyway, it was lovely to buy these. Some of them had, they had cats, they had dragonflies, they had butterflies, they had hearts. I got a bunch, mostly for gifts. I found one that was beachy for Beth at the chiropractic office. And I found a couple I'm going to bring to my naturopath, Marissa, out in Hebron. And I got cat ones for my coach and friend, Amanda, whose birthday it is tomorrow. And then I got a couple for me, of course. So so that was exciting. And some gluten-free goodies. And Ron was there. And we saw Joe Courtney there. So Joe Courtney is our congressperson, our U.S. congressperson. And I gave him a big hug because I said to him, I feel like it must be really hard doing what you're doing right now. So, and he accepted it for me, which was so cool. When I see Richard Blumenthal, I hug him too, because it's got to be really hard to be in Congress right now. So anyway, so that was exciting. I wandered around there, and then I went to the Willimantic Food Co-op, which is very nice, and got some goodies there. My, they have just this lovely bulk section. So I got ground flax seeds, and I got hemp seeds, and I got walnuts, and a little bit of chocolate, and my favorite flax oat muffins. I bought flax oat muffins, even though I'm planning to make gluten-free flax oat muffins. Anyway, so it was a most enjoyable day, and then I brought a gift to Coach Amanda. So that was my afternoon, and now I'm here making it a show. And in a couple weeks, there'll still be shows every week, but I'm making some in advance because we're going to Chicago, and I haven't been to Chicago since 1999 when I drove back from Oregon to go move to Newfoundland. And I don't know if we stopped in Chicago. I spent time in Chicago in 1995. No, that's wrong. I said 1999, didn't I? I meant 1995. So last time I was in Chicago was 1995. First time I was in Chicago was 1991 when I drove out to Oregon. And I spent 2 days there. And I remember riding my bike around Lake Michigan. It was very exciting. So I haven't been there since 1995. And so we're going back, and my stepson and his fiance are getting married. And that should be a lot of fun, seeing the whole fam and spending some time celebrating and exploring Chicago. Maybe I'll get a yoga class or a dance class or something. It should be fun, right? So that's coming up. Health-wise, Ron is still struggling. He thinks he's making little inroads. And he's going to get an electromyogram. And so they're going to find out if there's something really wrong with his muscles. He's continuing chiropractic. I'm going to have chiropractic on Monday. I'm very happy about that because my knees are a little achy, but I have been able to ride my bike. I'm mostly riding indoors still. I did one ride outside not too long ago. I'm hoping to ride outdoors this week coming up. So that'll be fun. I rode indoors and for a short while before yoga class this morning. The Bicycle Touring Club of North Jersey has a club on Zwift. So I joined a ride, and there was only three guys on the ride. It was two guys and a woman on the ride. And I joined them, and I just chatted them up for 20 minutes. We had a lovely chat. It was really fun. And we talked about, you know, New Jersey and Connecticut and said where we were all from and, what the weather was like where we were. And that's the kind of thing you talk about on Zwift. You try to stay away from politics. That's a good thing. But, you can take the girl out of New Jersey. You can't take Jersey out of the girl. Just a Jersey girl living a Connecticut life. What can I do? Right. So anyway, it's been kind of a nice day, I must say. And now I'm going to wrap up with this and give you some good information and talk about cool stuff. So did the Know Your Farmers Fair and that happened. Okay. So again, I'm not sure if I talked about the measles outbreak. There's the measles outbreak in Texas. So let's review that again. So there was a measles outbreak in Texas. And of course, people are really concerned about it. People are scared. They're wondering, am I going to get the measles? So here's the thing. So my patients are coming to me concerned about what the deal is with measles. Should they get revaccinated? So the thing is, it is so fraught to state a position around vaccination. And I've talked about this before. I talked about this during the pandemic. I am a scientist. And I, in terms of position, I don't want to align myself with the Democrats or the Republicans, with the liberals or the conservatives. I align myself with what I determine to be science. Are vaccines good for you? The answer is maybe. Are drugs good for you? The answer is always maybe. There's a saying I have. Patients come in and they're taking a supplement or they're taking a drug and they ask me, can this happen when I take this supplement or drug? And I have a saying that my staff knows what it is. Anything can do anything to anyone. Why? Because biochemical individuality. Everybody's different and everybody has different SNPs. Single nucleotide polymorphisms, that's little differences in various genes all over your body. So any nutrient can behave in many, many different ways depending on your biochemical individuality. The issue with the COVID vaccine is they really didn't know what it was going to do in a vast majority of people because it just hadn't been out very long. They say it wasn't really rushed, that the technology had been studied for years, but it hadn't been put into a massive population. And so there was some collateral damage. There were people, I believe there were some people who died because they had acute, very acute inflammation from it. I know that I had vaccine injury and lots of other people did too. And most people, I think, were okay. We think. We're not 100% sure. But my friend and colleague, Sean Brady, down at, in Enfield, is a cardiological physician's assistant, and he's brilliant. And, we chat and share information all the time, and we collaborate on patients. If somebody needs cardiology, I try to push them to him because my patients, when they finally get to see him, they're like, oh, it's like seeing a naturopath, but a cardiologist. Right. So that's why they get to go see him. Because he knows what supplements will help you and what natural medicine things will help. And then he bounces things off me and we share information and it's fab. Anyway, so he sent me a couple of articles of NIH articles from PubMed about the mRNA vaccine. So I haven't read them yet, so I'll review them and I will report back. But meanwhile, we're talking about measles, right? Okay. So my understanding is that there are Mennonites and Amish in many, many states. I think there's Amish, I don't know about Mennonite, but there are Amish communities in 32 states. Of course, the most Amish are in Lancaster County, in and around Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. That's the biggest one. So they're the Pennsylvania Dutch. Do you know what the number two state is? I didn't know this. It's Ohio. But that kind of makes sense because, you know, the western border of Pennsylvania borders on Ohio. That's the next state. So that kind of makes sense. But there are communities in many states. There's communities in Wisconsin and in Minnesota and in Iowa. If, you know, shout out to TikToker Lovina Hirschberger. Now, she left the Amish community, unfortunately. But she still celebrates her Amish heritage. She just doesn't want to follow the rules of being in the Amish community. She's originally from Iowa. And then she wound up with her husband, who's also former Amish, down in Texas. Anyway, so what's my understanding of what happened with the folks that had the measles was that it was a Mennonite community. And the Mennonite community, I don't think, vaccinates. So Mennonites, so I don't know all the details. So I don't want you to assume that I know absolutely everything about what happened. But Mennonites do interact with us English. So either you're either Amish or Mennonite or you're English, even if you're not English at all. You know, I'm, you know, Eastern European Jewish. But if you live in America and you're not Amish, to the Amish, you're English. That's how it works. So anyway, the Mennonites interact with English because they are not restricted from interacting with English. So they have trades and, you know, they make food and they do carpentry and all kinds of stuff. And so they interact with the English. So they largely don't vaccinate, or maybe they don't vaccinate at all. And so somebody got measles and they may have gotten it by interacting with an unvaccinated community somewhere in Texas, and it spread. And that's what happened. And there's been a couple of deaths from the measles. So there's a lot of controversy. There are people who are saying, oh, I got measles when I was a kid and I was a little bit sick and it was okay. One of my friends made the comment that if you are well nourished when you get the measles, then you do okay with it. You get a, you know, viral illness, you get a rash, and then you're over it and now you're immune for life. The other thing you should know about measles. So remember how during the time of COVID, we were worried about how we were all going to catch COVID. And at first we thought that it was droplets. So droplets are when you cough or sneeze, and droplets come out of your nose and mouth. And there was the whole idea that droplets only can travel about 6 feet. And that's where the stay 6 feet away from people came from. And so if you stayed 6 feet away, somebody coughed and sneezed or sneezed around you, it wasn't going to get on you. But we were washing everything. We were washing the groceries because we didn't really know how it was spread. So when you catch an illness from touching something and then touching your face, that's called a fomite. You get the illness from fomites. That's when the virus adheres to surfaces. You touch the surface, you touch the virus, and then you touch your face, and then you breathe it in, and now you have the illness. So and fecal oral illnesses transmit that way. So polio transmits that way. The norovirus, which is a gastroenteritis, transmits that way. So COVID mostly transmits by neither of those things. It's not mostly by droplets and it's not mostly by fomites. It is mostly by aerosol. So what's aerosol? Aerosol is when I'm sitting here talking to you. If you take your hand and you put it in front of your mouth and you exhale, you're going to feel warm moist on your hand. Why? Because when you exhale moisture, which is why when I habla, 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 which is Spanish for talk, 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 I keep water, water, water next to me, me, me. Because, and when I'm at my office, sometimes I drink down my water glass and I have to call my staff, please get me more water, because you lose water when you're speaking. Well, guess what? Those are aerosols because you're exhaling a fine mist when you speak. And if you cough, you're going to exhale aerosols too. Aerosols travel further than 6 feet. They can fill up the room. So the more real estate you have, the less likely, that's the idea of Brownian motion, the idea that molecules are going to spread out the more room that they have. That's why you're much less likely to catch COVID if you're outside than if you're indoors. And the more enclosed the space is, the more likely you are to catch it. And it's not so much from the proximity. It's that there's just nowhere for the aerosols to go. The further the aerosol, so if you're in a room, there's two of you in a room, one of you has COVID, and it's an enormous ballroom, and you're on the other side of it, you're less likely to catch COVID than if you're sitting right next to somebody in a plane. Now, if you're in the plane and the person who has COVID is in, you know, 15 rows ahead of you, you're probably not going to catch it because airplanes have a lot of filtration and they filter out the COVID. But if you're right next to them and you're unmasked, you're more likely to catch it. So personally on airplanes, still, I don't mask a lot anymore, but some situations I did. When we went to see Wicked, I masked because I hadn't been to a movie theater since COVID. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to wear a mask. It's November. I'm going to wear a mask. So I did. And I still always wear masks on planes because I've gotten sick. I've gotten colds from being on planes. So I still recommend masking on planes, at least a KN95. You could do the N95 if you want, but I do KN95 on the plane. So COVID is mostly transmitted by aerosols. And your likelihood of catching COVID is pretty good if you're in a room with with another person who has COVID. Your chances, if you are not immune to measles, if you're in a room with somebody who has measles, it's 90 plus, it's like 95 plus that you're going to get the measles. It's really, really contagious. It's more contagious than COVID. So measles, as fast as COVID spreads, measles is worse. So if you're not immune, you're probably going to catch it. So my patients are coming to me, should I get a vaccination? So what I say to them is, if you're not sure, if you want, if they have insurance that allows me to order labs for them, I'll say, hey, I'll order your titers. So I had a couple of people who said, yeah, go ahead, order my titers. And what I found, the most recent one that I ordered, I did their MMR. WMMR, woohoo! I said that last week. MMR is measles, mumps, and rubella. That because they come in, you know, the three in one shot. So I tested that. That person wanted to know if they had measles, if they were immune to measles. That was what they were most concerned about. So I tested their MMR, and their MMR was fine. So they had plenty of antibodies. So that person either had measles when they were a kid, or they were vaccinated and they still had adequate antibodies. So I let them know, you don't really have to because you're immune. So she couldn't remember she'd been vaccinated. She was a little bit older than me, so she may or may not have. She may have had the measles. So she was good there. I also tested her for DPT. DPT is diphtheria, pertussis, and tetanus. She had antibodies to pertussis. So that's probably good. The test for pertussis is weird. It does measure immunity. It measures exposure to pertussis. So she had plenty of antibodies, so she was exposed. And then tetanus, she had antitoxoid to tetanus present. What she didn't have was diphtheria. So I let her know that one, if you do okay with vaccines, and remember, these are not mRNA vaccines. These are vaccines with dead viral particles. So I said, if you do well with vaccines and you feel like you want to get this, that would be the one to get. There's no need for you to get MMR, but you might want to do, if you can get singly diphtheria, so that's the other thing. You have to find out if it's possible to get a single vaccination. So I had a doctor who was like, you should really re-up your tetanus shot. And I said, oh, do I have to? He's like, it's really kind of a good idea. And I can't remember if I got a tetanus shot when I broke my arm. I don't know that I did. Because usually if something happens to you in the hospital, it's like you're injured and you go to the ER, they will often give you a DPT. And they don't say, all right, we're just going to give you a tetanus shot. When they say we're giving you a tetanus shot, they're going to give you DPT. They're going to give you all three. Because that's mostly what they give. So I had the last time I had a tetanus shot was within the last 10, 15 years. And, I looked at the card and I realized that I had gotten a DPT. So I had that, you know, in my adult life. So I'm guessing my MMR is probably okay. My DPT is probably okay. I probably should redo my titers. But anyway, if you're thinking about whether you want to get a vaccination, there's not one right answer for everybody. And when RFK Jr. said, Getting vaccinated is a personal decision, and everybody freaked out and said, oh, but what about herd immunity? What about the community? It's still a personal decision, because what if you have a terrible inflammatory condition, and if you got a vaccination, it would enhance the inflammatory condition. It's not a good idea. If you have an autoimmune condition and the least little thing sets you off, you have to think twice about whether you can get it. It's not right for everybody. It's probably okay for most people, though. If you've had a bad reaction to a vaccination in the past, it's probably not a good idea. And then, you know, if there are measles outbreaks, you have to stay home. That's how you handle that. So it's not insane for him to say it's a personal decision. And so, you know, people want to demonize him because he presents as kind of wacky. And sure, is he kind of wacky? Okay. Perhaps. But there's a funny saying, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. So when you're getting really angry at people who have a different political perspective than you, unless they're actively hurting people, it is okay to exchange, to have dialogue with them. And you might have dialogue, you might find that you still have some commonalities, and that it's not necessary for us to have the great divide. Remember, division, divide and conquer is a saying. There's no unite and conquer. There's unite and thrive. But divide and conquer is totally a strategy. So the strategy of putting Americans on different sides of the fence, that's part of what's wrecking this country and creating chaos. And the most radical thing we could do is to step back from the furor and reunite and find commonalities and find a way to be together again, and stop all these divisive ideas and these divisive problems. Recognize the policies that are being put forth that are really divisive, and just everybody step away from that. Easier said than done, right? But it's heartbreaking to see what's going on in this country right now. Without getting too political, right? I don't want to tell you what side I'm on. I am on the side of righteousness. I believe that everybody does better when everybody does better. And I am in favor of people being able to buy their groceries and being able to have a job and not lose their house and feel safe in their homes and feel safe regardless of their belief, their religion, their gender identity, and their sexual preference. That's what I believe. Whatever, you know, whether that's Democrat or who cares, right? I believe that, I'm kind of a flower child, quite honestly. If you watch me on Instagram, I take that to heart, because I use the filter that has the flower. I have an actual flower I can put in my hair, but I didn't do that. So anyway, I wish we would all get back together. But meanwhile, some of the other things that RFK Jr. said and that got trounced by the MSM was they were supplying these areas where there were people with measles with vitamin A and antibiotics. And they freaked out and said vitamin A is unproven and antibiotics don't work. It's a virus. Here's the thing. Vitamin A has been studied to be an antiviral. And people who are vitamin A sufficient, I'm not going to say it's always true, but people who are vitamin A sufficient tend to do better with measles. That's just true. Also, if you ingest adequate vitamin A, you're less likely to get sick with viral infections. I mean, we give it to people as an antiviral. I take a little bit of vitamin A every day while also consuming produce with carotenoids in it. So your leafy greens and your brightly colored vegetables, your pepper, your red and orange and yellow peppers, your red and orange and yellow fruits, all have carotenoids in them. Any leaf has carotenoids in them. And beta carotene, there's no vitamin A in plants. There's beta carotene, and beta carotene gets converted in your body to vitamin A. There's vitamin A in animal products. So when he was talking about using cod liver oil, they freaked out about that. And I'm like, look, cod liver oil is, that's not a bad thing to do, because he's right that it has essential fatty acids in it, which are anti-inflammatory. And it also does have vitamin A and vitamin D, which are good for your immune system. It's not such a terrible thing to say that. Say what you will about him, you know, the fact that this gentleman was appointed, who is not a physician, who doesn't have a broad scope of knowledge about medicine, which, you know, not thrilled about that. But again, a stopped clock is right twice a day. So that guy, not everything that comes out of his mouth is wrong. And, you know, when you demonize somebody, absolutely, you can't get any benefit from that person. And now I'm not saying that there's some public figures who I have trouble seeing the good in them, and I will admit that there are, but RFK Jr. is not one. I think RFK Jr.'s heart is in the right place. I think he's a good guy. I think maybe they could have done better in terms of choosing someone who actually had a medical background, or, you know, like it was a physician. That would have been nice. Or a medical administrator, but really somebody who's a physician should be running the Health and Human Services division, right? But anyway, not everything he says is wrong. if somebody has the measles, giving them high dose vitamin A, high dose vitamin D, and it's true that antibiotics are not antiviral. Well, that's not entirely true though, because azithromycin does have antiviral properties, even though it is generally an antibiotic, and antibiotics generally kill bacteria. That's what they're for. Azithromycin happens to have antiviral activity. So some of the antibiotics, you can't just say they only kill bacteria, because they don't all only kill bacteria. Azithromycin definitely can have some antiviral activity. So I don't know what antibiotics they've provided people with. But the other piece is that when you have measles, you can get inflammation in your lungs and you can get pneumonia. And if your pneumonia becomes bacterial, then you need antibiotics. So sending them antibiotics makes sense. So it wasn't all bad. So cod liver oil and vitamin A and vitamin D and straight up vitamin A and antibiotics are not terrible things for when someone has measles. Whatever you do, if somebody's really sick, you want to be on top of them, make sure they're getting fluids, make sure they're able to breathe, make sure their immune system's functioning well. And if you do have some understanding of natural medicine, there are things that can help them. So that's what I think about that. All right, so I think I went on about measles for 2 weeks in a row, so I think we'll set that aside. It's just exciting because, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, you should listen to RFK Jr. What I'm saying is, this is my perspective. Let's all calm down and look at the facts. Let's set aside whether we're in favor of Republicans or Democrats, conservative or liberal, or, you know, libertarian or NDP or whatever you happen to be. Let's all set that all aside and let's just look at the facts. Take a deep breath and calm down and just look at what's going on. Taking a deep breath and calming down is a really good thing to do right now. I mean, there's a lot to be up in arms about. So making sure that you're taking time to take fasts from what's going on in the media and what's going on in our country probably is a good thing. It's good for your health and it's good for your sanity. And if you need to take complete media breaks, it's really fine, because if there's something that happens and there's something you absolutely need to do, someone will tell you. You're not going to miss something, and doom scrolling is just not good for your health. So I don't recommend it. More yoga, more meditation, more walks in nature. We are starting to head into spring. It is meteorological spring, and in a couple weeks it will be astronomical spring. Yay! And we have a sign on Stores Road and in Stores, the Ledge Crest Nursery. And they have a sign out front that you see as you're driving by, and it counts the weeks till spring. So and you get excited when you see the number going down. And now we're at 2 weeks till spring. So the equinox is coming. Woohoo! And we're also going to have daylight savings time, which is not a thrill because you lose an hour of sleep. And that's a whole other thing. And I'm going to talk about that next, actually. So let's go there. Let's talk about daylight savings time. Because we're moving into daylight savings time, we're going to spring ahead. And not everybody feels good when that happens. So it's that practice of setting your clocks forward an hour between the months of March and November. And the non-daylight savings time period between November and March is known as standard time. So the idea is to adjust your clock so there's more daylight in the evening. Therefore, it's a way to save light. Most of the U.S. has observed daylight savings time since 1966. Did you know that? There are certain places that don't, though. So Hawaii, certain parts of Arizona. So I guess it's not all of Arizona, but I think it's most of it. The places that don't are the reses, I believe. Like if you go to the Navajo reservation, they don't follow, they do follow daylight savings time. But when you cross into Arizona from Nevada, because this I have done, I used to visit my friends in Arizona, and we would drive from Las Vegas, Ron would have a conference in Las Vegas, and then we would drive from Las Vegas to Arizona to where our friends live. It's just a 4-hour drive. Which is similar to me going down to see my sister. And we would cross the border and the time would change because Arizona doesn't observe daylight savings time. So it would be an hour later in Arizona. So if depending on the time of year. And we would go in April. So it would already be daylight savings time wherever they do that. So you're supposed to set the clock forward at 2 a.m. on the second Sunday in March, which is happening around now. And you get an hour less of sleep that night. So you set, and then in November, the first Sunday in November, you set the clocks back. So you do spring forward, fall backward, change all your watches. If you still have most people don't have regular watches anymore. I'm a throwback. I still wear a regular watch, and I only wear it to the office because, you know, I find out the time in my car or from my phone. Otherwise, I don't have a smartwatch. I may, you know, decide finally to do that. We'll see. So you'd think that it wouldn't be too drastic a change, but there are troubling trends that happen with the transition between standard and daylight savings time. It's worse during this transition from daylight savings time, from standard to daylight savings time, as opposed to the opposite, where you get an extra hour of sleep. It makes sure you'd have less, it would stand to reason you'd have less trouble there. Because you're gaining an hour of sleep, you get, hey, an hour of more rest. When you have an hour of less rest, that's not a good thing. So what they notice is there are upticks in heart problems, mood issues, and motor vehicle collisions. It can cause sleep problems. It can disrupt your circadian rhythm, so they're not aligned with the natural cycles of light and dark. And some people have insomnia around the springtime changes. So daylight savings time can affect sleep. We're guided by circadian rhythms, which are 24-hour cycles that regulate sleep and your other bodily functions like appetite and your mood. The rhythms are largely dependent on light exposure and synchronizing with natural light-dark cycles to promote healthy, high-quality sleep. Transitioning twice a year between standard and daylight savings time changes the hours when we're exposed to natural light, which can interfere with your sleep-wake cycle and throw off your ability to feel alert in the morning and sleepy at night. So circadian misalignment can contribute to sleep loss or sleep debt, referring to the cumulative effects of not getting enough sleep over a period of days or weeks. We're most vulnerable to sleep loss during the spring clock change. And there's a study that found the average person receives 40 minutes less sleep on the Monday after springing forward. Ugh. There's a picture here of Marco Rubio saying, "This is still happening." So that it's a video, actually. I need to watch it. So maybe Marco Rubio is in favor of not having it happen anymore. Well, so I'll report on that at another time. In addition to sleep loss, studies have found that people are greater risk for mood disturbance, suicide, and being involved in traffic accidents during both biannual clock changes. Daylight savings time may reduce some traffic accidents as more people drive home from work in daylight. That's when you tend to be more tired. Sleep disruptions are less likely to occur in November when daylight savings time ends. In fact, some people get an extra hour of sleep from falling back, but some people have trouble adjusting to the new wake-up time. So for most people, the effects of springing forward or falling back gradually subside over a few days or weeks, but some studies suggest that some people never acclimate to the clock changes in daylight savings time. So for them, circadian misalignment may become chronic and can lead to more serious health problems, especially if you have to cut sleep short because of work or school. Should we ditch it? What do I think? You know what? I think it's such a small thing, and it's a small thing that's a big thing, because all we would have to do is not do it, and then if it disrupts sleep, anything that, you know, I mean, patients come into me, I have insomnia. Okay, you have insomnia. Let's talk about what might be contributing to it. Number one, do you drink caffeine? Yes, but only in the morning. Okay, I know you drink caffeine only in the morning, but caffeine can stay on board anywhere from 6 to 10 hours. So when you're trying to go to sleep, you may still have some caffeine on board. Pardon me while I drink. Anyway, when you're trying to help somebody with their sleep, you look at all their sleep hygiene. Now, if not changing the time that people go to sleep and get up would help, why don't we just stop? It's a simple thing, and it can have profound effects on people's health. I think the thing to do is just make it standard time. That's where to do it. That you wanna because if you left it at daylight savings time, you know, the hour ahead, it would get much darker. Well, we would be getting up in the morning. The sun would be rising in the 8 o'clock hour, which we don't have that here. I think that they do have, the further north you go, that can happen. That certainly can happen. The further north you go, if you get north of 60th parallel, then you have lots and lots of dark. Like the sun barely rises or doesn't rise at all on the solstice, the closer you are to the North Pole or to either of the poles. Here in the Northeast, if we stayed with daylight savings time all year, we would be having sunrises after 8 o'clock. So like 8:15, 8:20, our max, our latest sunrise would be in November. It would happen at like 20 after eight. And I don't know if people want to do that. If we left it at standard time, we wouldn't get that, you know, we wouldn't have light until almost 9 o'clock at night like we do now. It would be like 8-ish that the sun would set, which I think is fine. And we would get to wake up, you know, we would have a max like we do, you know, in November and in January, our latest sunrise would be in the 7 o'clock hour, which is reasonable for the Northeast. You have to think about how are most of the people going to be affected? I think that if changing to daylight savings time makes it so that a lot of people have trouble such that they're going to have car accidents, they can have cardiovascular events, they just feel sleepy and tired and all that goes with that, why do it? You know? But right now we're still doing it. A lot of sleep experts advocate for abandoning the system altogether in favor of single year-round time. They argue that permanent standard time better suits circadian rhythms and would benefit public health and safety. That's what I just said. On the other side of the argument, people in favor of daylight savings time say it decreases energy consumption because more people are awake later in the day, so they don't use as much light, they don't use as much stuff, and they spend more time outside, so not inside consuming electricity. It reduces car accidents because, again, people can see when they're outside in the light. And there's more commerce and after-work activity, and that crime rates decrease when there's more daylight. Well, there's going to be more daylight at either end of the day anyway. So I don't know that you would increase that crime that much if you switch to standard time. Legislation has been introduced in Congress to authorize states to adopt permanent daylight savings time, but there are no bills passed and no indications that federal legislative change is coming. A lot of state legislatures have passed laws that observe permanent daylight savings time contingent upon a change in federal laws. Clock changes continue to be a matter of debate at the state level, but unless federal regulations change, the effect of state action is limited. So Dustin Cotlier, who's a sleep medicine physician, says when dealing with disruptions to your circadian rhythm, melatonin can be helpful to get things back on track when used in consultation with your doctor. So here's some tips to help you with daylight savings time. Number one, avoid alcohol before bed. While alcohol can cause sleepiness in the short term, it can cause long-term disruptions because it's dehydrating, and it, even though it makes you drowsy immediately, in the long run, if you can keep consuming alcohol, alcohol is dehydrating, as I said. Also, you need B vitamins to metabolize alcohol, and so you will be short on B vitamins, and you need B vitamins to regulate some of the hormones that help you with sleep, most notably serotonin. You need specifically vitamin B6 to regulate your serotonin while you're going to be using that B6 to help you detoxify the alcohol out your liver. So the more alcohol you drink, the less B vitamins you're going to have, B1, B3, B6. You're going to be short on those things. So, and that's one of the mechanisms. There are a number of mechanisms. And one is that, you know, your liver prioritizes detoxifying alcohol. And so, your liver is going to be mostly, processing that alcohol. And it's not as available to process your hormones and neurotransmitters that affect your sleep-wake cycle. So avoiding alcohol before bed, avoiding most alcohol, staying hydrated, good things. Have a consistent sleep routine. You want to go to bed and wake up the same time each day. How many times do you hear that? Even on the weekends, then that can promote more consistent sleep before and after changes between the standard and daylight savings time. Alter your bedtime gradually. Did I do that? No. Because my schedule doesn't change. I still have to be certain places at certain times, so I have to play to those times. But if you can do that, it's a good thing. If you can go to bed and wake up the same time each day, even on the weekend, it can promote more consistent sleep. And altering your bedtime gradually before the transition, 2 or 3 days before, try to wake up 15 to 20 minutes earlier than usual. So it's not a shock when you have to wake up a whole early hour earlier. I didn't do that either. Adjusting in advance may help you have a smoother transition. Spend time outdoors. Since natural light is a driving force behind our circadian rhythms, exposure to sunlight can alleviate feelings of tiredness in the morning. Natural light can help reorient your circadian rhythm to minimize sleep disruptions. One of the things I notice is when I'm very tired, I get tired out at work. Sitting, you know, interacting with patients, doing all the paperwork I have to do, sitting in front of a computer screen are very tiring. And I get that that is the thing that tires me out the most. And it tires me out more, I think, than hard exercise. And so I find that if I just step outside even for a minute, and especially if it's cool out, I feel so much better. Even if I'm really tired and really I need a nap, if I step outside, I feel a lot better. Getting into that natural light, getting away from screens, not focusing on fixed little objects on a screen, whereas focusing panoramically on things like trees and even houses and cars and, birds and stuff, that helps a lot. That's energizing and can take up some physical energy, which can help you to sleep. So spending time outdoors is always helpful. Nap in moderation. If you feel sleepy, a short nap can give you a boost of energy. They should be 20 minutes or less to avoid feeling groggy. So what do you do when you're tired? Drink coffee? What's better than drinking coffee is resting. If you're tired, you should rest. If you have to go to the bathroom, you shouldn't hold it. You should go to the bathroom. If you're thirsty, you should drink. You know, it's that simple. And that's one of the hardest things that we have in our culture is that we don't rest when we're tired. And I keep saying, you know what people who are wealthy or retired do when they're tired? They rest. And I'm so jealous of them. After I'm done processing this show today, I am going to rest. And tomorrow is a day off for me, so I'm going to be able to get a lot of rest tomorrow. If you do caffeine, don't consume it close to bedtime. And if you do caffeine in the morning and you still have trouble sleeping, maybe you don't want to do caffeine at all. You have to really find your sweet spot for caffeine. And people in general consume too much. And so whatever your sweet spot is, that's what you do. And if your sweet spot is none, so be it. My sweet spot is little to none. And I like how I feel on it. So I really haven't found a an amount to dial in, because if I overdo caffeine, one day I wake up and I feel like a truck hit me because I just don't metabolize it very well. So consume your caffeine. That if you have caffeine in the afternoon, it can definitely throw off your sleep. If you have too much caffeine, even if it's in the morning, it can throw off your sleep. So if you're having trouble sleeping, consider avoiding caffeine until you figure out your amount. So that's that bit about daylight savings time. All right, and I may have more information. Yes, I have this. All right, so here's some neat information. More than 60% of countries around the world following standard time all year. Who knew that? That a lot of most of the countries in the world do not do this time change business. Most of the United States, here it is, with the exception of Arizona, Hawaii, the Navajo Nation does not observe daylight savings time, but there are parts of Arizona that do, and I thought they were reservations, but maybe, and it could be, but it's just not Navajo. The U.S. territories of American Samoa, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, Puerto Rico, and the United States Virgin Islands, they don't do daylight savings time. And if you notice, the places that don't do it are closer to the equator. Now, Arizona is not so close to the equator. Arizona, latitude-wise, is, I think it's in the 30s. If somebody knows, please write it to me on Insta or Facebook Live. Whereas my mother lives in Venice, Florida. Venice, Florida is at 27. So that's subtropical. It's not the tropics. Tropic of Cancer goes through Key West, so the very bottom of Florida. And then, of course, Puerto Rico is below that, so Puerto Rico is in the tropics. So their day length doesn't change that much over the course of the year. I mean, Puerto Rico is probably in the low 20s. So if Key West is at 23, Puerto Rico is probably at 1920 or something like that. And so their day length, they don't have the extreme differences in day length like we do. They don't really benefit much from changing time. And so all these other places, these Pacific islands like American Samoa, Guam, and the Northern Marianas and Hawaii, are much closer to the equator. And once again, they don't benefit from the change. You know, you're like, oh, you get the extra daylight. What am I going to get? 20 minutes? It's not worth doing. So they don't do it there. So sleep physicians question the impact that daylight savings time has on health. There's Phyllis Z, MD, who talks about, who's a specialist and chief of sleep medicine in neurology at Northwestern, which is in Chicago, where I'm going in a few weeks. Science evolved over the last decade to show that the transition between standard and daylight savings time is associated with bad health consequences. So should we stop doing this? So daylight savings time is a potential barrier to sleep. So your sleep health is based on two processes, which is sleep homeostasis, the desire to sleep that builds from the moment you wake up till bedtime, and then your circadian rhythm, which is your natural 24-hour biological cycle. And that regulates the timing of when you go to sleep and your wakefulness during the day. And it's set by the timing and amount of bright light exposure you get during the day. With daylight savings time between March and November, your body's exposed to less morning light and more evening light, which can throw off your circadian rhythm. So, of course, waking up in the dark is hard. And, you know, when we spring ahead, the sunrise is going to get an hour earlier all of a sudden. And so we're going to be in the dark more. I kind of like that because it helps me to sleep longer, which I like to do. It's harder. If you go to bed too late and the sun rises at 5 a.m., it's very hard to get back to sleep when there's all that sunlight coming in. So it's a good idea to go to bed earlier during the summer. So when your internal clock's out of sync with the sun, you can feel tired in the morning and awake in the evening, and that just throws off your circadian cycle. If you adopt permanent standard time, our internal clocks will be more in sync with the rotation of the earth and seasonal change and the sun clock. There is a broader health hazard that the transition to daylight savings time can create health problems, sleep issues, fatigue, blood pressure changes, and that feel like traveling to another time zone or prolonged jet lag. And those late starters are people who tend to wake up later in the morning, like teenagers, who tend to be night owls, are more vulnerable to the effects because they already sleep through more hours of natural morning light, which can throw them off even worse. So if you're a night owl, daylight savings time is not your friend. So it can have long-term health effects like depression, slower metabolism, weight gain, and even if you are a person who gets cluster headaches, you can have more of them, probably migraines too. There's a risk of developing certain disorders like cognitive and mental health issues to digestive and heart disease. And if you already have them, it can make them worse. There's higher risks of heart attacks. The week after daylight savings time, there's higher risks of heart attacks, higher risks of injuries, including a spike in fatal car accidents, higher stroke rate, higher mental and cognitive issues, and digestive and immune disorders like colitis. So it's like we said before, keep a sleep routine, aim for 7 to 9 hours at night. Try to prepare by going to bed an hour earlier. Chase the morning light for 1 to 2 days leading up to the switch. Get outside in the morning. More natural morning light can help you preserve your circadian rhythm. Avoid sleep disturbances like too much caffeine, alcohol, and blue light, which you're going to get from screens. I try to tell people, if you have insomnia, you got to put the screens down at least an hour before bed. If you still want to do something, listen to music, listen to stories, or read a paper book, not on your tablet, and like get away from screens so that your body, your eyes can relax. I know that when I read, if I read a screen, screens are very stimulating, whether it's my tablet or my phone or the computer or the TV. Screens are very stimulating because of the light, and my eyes are trying to adjust to the pixels that are happening. And if I put away the screens, it's very relaxing. And if I read a book, the nice thing that happens is I read, and then I will eventually get sleepy and my eyes will droop. I'll be reading the same sentence 3 times and I'm like, all right, it's time to put the book down. So I naturally start to feel calmer and like I need to sleep while I'm reading a paper book. So reading, if you feel like you want to do something entertaining and you're not ready to go to sleep yet, read the book, and after a while you're going to feel sleepy, you're going to want to go to sleep. If you get exercise in the morning, that'll raise your body temperature and increases your wakefulness. I wake up sleepy and then I get some exercise. As long as I'm not too sleepy, I get some exercise, it wakes me up. And I definitely, you know, before I go to work, I get at least a little bit of exercise. I do just weights and yoga on the later start days, and on the early start days, I just do some yoga. Sometimes I go for a walk, but I don't do anything super strenuous anymore before work. So that's the deal with daylight savings time. I hope you all do well with it, and do be kind to yourself. If you feel more tired and less productive in the week that's coming up, give yourself permission to rest more. Don't feel like you have to accomplish any big projects in the week coming up when it's daylight savings time. Take more naps, get more sleep, have a cup of relaxing herbal tea, and read books more. Just, you know, don't feel bad about lying around a little bit more while you're adjusting to the time change. I know that when I travel, that's right, think about this. We're going to Chicago. It's going to be an hour earlier in Chicago, so we're going to have to deal with that time change at the beginning of April for a few days. I forgot about that. And that is why I didn't think about that. I bought the plane tickets last night, and the flight seemed awfully short because we leave at 6:45 and arrive at 8:15. But I forgot about the time change. So that I thought, oh, that's cool. That's an hour and a half flight. No, it's not. It's 2.5 hours. It's the same, about the same as if I did a nonstop to Sarasota. So yeah, I forgot about that time change. But, you know, we're going to get there in the morning on a Thursday, so we'll take a nap. Anyway, so hopefully you'll find some nice things to do. You get more exercise. This is a good week to think about getting some exercise in the morning. And if you're feeling tired, don't make it too strenuous. A gentle walk is great. Getting outside is fantastic. If you feel like it's still too cold to go for a walk, then just before you do exercise inside your house, go outside and stand on the porch or stand on your balcony or whatever you have that's access to the outdoors. And just hang out outside for you know, 3 or 5 minutes and just, you know, just be. Just stand in your yard, stand in, on your porch, stand in your balcony, whatever you have in your place of where you live, and just be outside. And then if you can go outside during the workday, do that too. And I forget to do that there. Sometimes I just work straight through the day and I don't even step outside. And that's really not good. What I should be doing is, well, it's not, I don't feel like it's warm enough to eat my lunch outside yet, but when it gets warm enough, that would be a good thing for me to do. Just go sit on the stoop and eat lunch. Or maybe we should put a chair outside so we could sit and have our lunch outside if we want to. Anyway, be kind to yourself. Spend time with a friend. You know, do relaxing activities. Do a puzzle. Do something fun. Watch an extra movie. And don't worry about it. So that's it. So we talked about measles and the Know Your Farmer Fair, and we talked about daylight savings time, which is appropriate because we're just about entering it. And we'll talk a bit more about, we'll go back into talking about some things that can be helpful for osteoarthritis, and then some, I haven't talked about supplements for obesity, which I want to do. All right, so you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.